Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Telix Medical 2019 full year investor presentation. All participants are in listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Marie Miller, Interim CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and thank you everyone for taking the time to join us on today's investor call as we provide an overview of our financial results for the full year ended 30th of June 2019. Joining me this morning is Dr. Tom Duthy from Investor Relations and Corporate Development. I trust that you have a copy of Telix's full year investor presentation, or you are following our broadcast online, where we will transition the slides directly to you. I draw your attention to slide two, our legal disclaimer, as today's conference call and webcast, which may contain forward-looking statements. Our key financial information for the full year ended 30th of June is highlighted along with certain market information pertaining to our securities on slide three. Our reported revenues for the year were $81.6 million, up 3%, and Telix recorded a net loss after tax of $5.8 million. Late in the first half of financial year 2019, Telix commenced trading on the U.S. OTCQX Best Market with the ticker ELXMY and ELXMF. The directors and management of the company continue to hold a significant position of the outstanding shares on issue, namely 14%. Turning now to slide four, the overview of our business. Telix is a world leader in the design, manufacture, and sale of a comprehensive range of ophthalmic lasers, evolving consumable devices, and diagnostic equipment. These products serve multi-billion-dollar markets, namely glaucoma, diabetic eye disease, secondary cataracts, age-related macular degeneration or AMD, and vitreous opacities. Our installed base of lasers and diagnostic equipment globally is in excess of 35,000 units, and to date, more than 108,000 Telix iTrack consumable devices have been sold to treat glaucoma. Telix has a direct sales force in our major markets, including the USA, Japan, Germany, France, and Australia, and a presence in over 100 countries across the globe. We continue to target our two high-growth market segments of glaucoma and age-related macular degeneration, with our innovative range of products having made excellent progress throughout the year in achieving solid growth within both these disease indications. Turning to slide five, our highlights for the year. Our group revenues grew 3% to $81.6 million, driven by a very strong iTrack contribution, with revenues up 29% to $14.3 million. In September, we reported on the LX292-patient lead clinical trial, which showed a four-fold reduction in the rate of progression to late-stage AMD in 76% of patients who received LX2RT over the 36 months of the study. Very recently, and just after the end of the financial year, we also reported on the fourth year or 48-month lead trial, which showed sustained positive results in those same RPD-negative patients who exhibited a strong benefit at 36 months or 3 years. We were delighted to announce the publication of the LIGHT clinical study, which showed significant superior benefits of SLT in the treatment of first-line glaucoma patients versus traditional eye drop-based interventions. Not only do patients who receive the SLT exhibit better control of their disease at 3 years, none of the SLT patients' disease progressed to a stage that required surgical intervention. And overall, the procedure was more cost-effective than eye drops. Elix is the world leader in SLT with its Tango and Tango Reflex SLT lasers. We anticipate the benefits of this data will flow to increased utilisation of SLT in major markets, including the US and UK over time. Finally, we launched the next generation of our Elix iPrime ultrasound platform at the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgery, also known as ASCRS meeting. Turning now to slide 6, the group financial summary. Today, Elix reported global sales revenues of $81.6 million, up 3% on prior corresponding period and down 6% on constant currency basis. Our four-year revenue compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, stands at 9%, which has outperformed overall industry growth rates over the same period. Although the company experienced a reasonable currency tailwind over the period through the depreciation of the Australian dollar relative to the US dollar and euro dollar particularly, which benefited sales, operating expenditures grew to $52.4 million. However, in constant currency terms, our operating expenditures fell 4%. As mentioned already, we continue to invest into our high-growth glaucoma segment to drive future growth. The glaucoma segment does tend to have a high US and euro-denominated exposure. Our gross margin, excluding production labour, was up 410 basis points to 62.2% versus the prior corresponding period, which reflects currency benefits coupled with improved mix dynamics through a higher proportion of higher margin products in glaucoma. At the EBITDA level, the group recorded an underlying loss of $0.7 million, which excludes the $0.3 million in restructuring charges. Our reported EBITDA loss was $1 million, which improved slightly over the PCP, which was an improvement of 12% versus prior period. The company recorded negative operating cash flows of $4.2 million, reflecting increased working capital investment, particularly in inventory, to support expected sales growth. I will address this further in later slides. Turning to slide 7, which compares and contrasts our revenue by geographic region compared to prior periods. North America, the vast majority in the US, continues to be the strongest Elix market by sales and revenue composition, with sales reaching 47% of our group sales in 2019. Our North American business has been driven by very strong growth in Elix iTrack, along with SLT growth in our key glaucoma market. Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, or EMEA, consists of direct markets, namely France and Germany, with the balance via distributors. Our revenues were relatively flat this year in that region, with gains from 2RT and SLT offset by iTrack and other lasers and ultrasound sales. Our Japanese revenues increased 4% on prior year, largely currency driven, although we continue to focus our Japanese business on a selling bias towards higher margin products such as SLT. Asian sales, including China but excluding Japan, grew 14% with good growth across the entire Elix product range, albeit off a relatively modest base. Finally, ANZ sales were up 7% versus prior period with continued momentum in SLT and initial sales of Elix 2RT post-lead. Slide 8 shows our revenue split by the eye diseases we treat, including the diagnostic ultrasound. As I have already pointed out, Elix continues to see strong customer demand for its SLT laser to treat glaucoma, with a growth of 10% on prior period and iTrack revenue growth of 29%. This category has delivered an impressive 3-year compound annual growth rate at CAGR of 24%. With this solid growth, there has been a significant increase in our glaucoma product mix, from 36% in FY16 to 57% of group revenues in FY19. Justifying our investment and a focus into this high growth, underpenetrated market. Our 2RT laser recorded a 260% increase in sales over prior period, with strong initial sales following the results of our lead trial in the first half. However, growth did moderate in the second half. Several of our disease segments did not perform to our expectations during the year. Our cataracts and vitrolysis lasers declined 23% over prior period, as competitive pricing pressures continued into the second half. Our retina disease lasers declined 2% over prior period as continued pressure from pharmaceutical interventions to treat disease such as diabetic diseases and diabetic macular edema versus laser-based intervention. Finally, our diagnostic ultrasound revenue was down 37% on PCP to $4.3 million. We release our next generation platform of iPrime in May, which we hope will stabilise and grow our ultrasound business over time. Turning to slide 9 on operating expenditures. Total operating expenditure was up 10.2% to $52.4 million, representing 64% of sales versus 60% in prior period. Looking more carefully at our major line items, our employee expenses were up 10%, principally due to the headcount expansion across field sales and management capability, commissions paid on sales growth, and FX effects. Our sales and marketing spend of $5.4 million, which was up 29% on prior period, was a result of increased efforts for LXiTrack in the key US market, SLT, and the marketing of 2RT post-lead, along with currency impacts highly US denominated. Our sales and marketing, which is predominantly foreign exchange denominated, was also impacted by FX. Other expenses consisting of professional consultants, travel expenditure and other items grew 23% to $11.8 million or 15% of sales, principally driven by increased activity around plans for 2RT dialogue with the US Food and Drug Administration. I would now like to focus on our consumable device business iTrack in glaucoma, which we see as foundational for our long-term growth at LX. Turning to slide 11, we see that iTrack unit volumes increased 17% on prior period and revenues were up 29% to $14.3 million. During the fourth quarter of the financial year, LX implemented a low double-digit price rise for iTrack in the US market. Noting this was the first price increase in a number of years, and reimbursement continues to remain very strong in that market. Although there were some benefits that accrued during the quarter at the new price, clearly the full effects of the increase will be in 2020 financial year and beyond. The higher than average AUD price for iTrack was mostly attributable to due to FX benefits and mix effects from a higher US volume component. Segment gross margin ex labour was 79%, down from 84% in PCP, reflecting some manufacturing rework during the period at our facility in Fremont, California. Our iTrack business highlighted strong cost-based leverage during the second half, which recorded $1.1 million EBITDA loss versus a $4 million loss in the first half to give a full-year EBITDA loss of $5.1 million. We anticipate the iTrack business will generate positive EBITDA for the business in the second half of the financial year 2020. Turning to slide 12, which looks at our regional contribution to unit sales, we note the US unit sales were up 30% versus prior period and revenues up 45% to $10 million. In constant currency terms, revenues grew 33%. This strong growth for the full year of iTrack reflected continued expansion of accounts, users and deeper penetration within the accounts. iTrack outside US unit sales, excluding China, were down 9%, with revenues up 2% to $3.3 million. We noted some improvement in German sales via Hoya Corporation, which acquired our previous distributor in the first half. Chinese unit sales were up 42% versus prior period, with revenues growing 7% to $1.1 million. Unfortunately, the impact of tariffs impacted net pricing despite these strong volumes. LXiTrack continues to be the only MIGS device approved in the Chinese market. Slide 13 presents a detailed synopsis of our key US market opportunity. During the period, new account setups were very strong, growing 49% over the prior period to 396 accounts. Importantly, from the perspective of a more effective and efficient sales force, our field sales personnel has grown 17% over the period. In other words, we are significantly expanding our footprint without a material expansion in headcount. As we indicated at the first half, we anticipate the strength in new account setup during the period will be a driver of order growth for iTrack in coming periods. We saw an increase in FY19 reorders of 46% versus prior period, while new order or reorder mix of 91%, 9% reflected a focus on higher volume customers. Orders from new accounts, which represents only the initial order from a new account during the period, were down 18% to $0.6 million on a four-year basis. We remain excited by the opportunities for iTrack in the US. When we overlay the accounts by ophthalmology specialty and by ambulatory surgical centre or ASC, we note our user penetration is approximately 6% of the available specialists who could use iTrack in their practices, while at the ASC level, which are the majority of our accounts, is approximately 17% penetrated. Our currently capacity is in the excess of 50,000 units per annum, which implies less than 30% utilisation at our FY19 production volume. Moving to our next business segment, laser and ultrasound, I wanted to provide our investors with a snapshot of its performance during the half. Moving to the slide 15, investors will note that despite negative revenue growth of 3% to $65.5 million, our lasers and ultrasound gross margin expanded by over 500 basis points to 59% and segment EBITDA increased 6% to $9.5 million. While the second half performance lagged that of the first half in terms of top line growth, it was pleasing to see the growth in EBITDA from its segment overall. As with previous financial years, our lasers and ultrasound EBITDA is invested into growth opportunities for iTrack and 2RT. Hence, the group EBITDA loss remains modest once more for FY19. Our final business segment, I wanted to provide our investors with an update related to 2RT for the treatment of intermediate age-related macular degeneration, or IAMD. As slide 17 highlights, we saw solid growth in sales of our 2RT laser, up 260% to $1.8 million. Investors will recall the 532% growth in the first half to $1.2 million, following the lead results, indicating that sales volumes and revenues moderated in the second half. Gross margins improved 15% to 57% versus the prior period as unit sales mix were initially skewed to distributor markets in Europe. Segment EBITDA loss narrowed to a loss of 0.6 million, an improvement from the 1 million loss in the prior period. We recorded several unit sales into the United States where 2RT's FDA cleared for clinically significant macular edema, or CSME. Purchase prices and per procedure fees were stable and fees collected were 0.2 million for the year. I now just wanted to provide an update on our corporate activities as they relate to 2RT, particularly the FDA process which is ongoing. As a quick recap, investors will note we have been focused on the education and marketing of the lead clinical trial results, which showed a clinically meaningful 77% reduction in the rate of progression to late AMD in 76% of patients enrolled in the study of 3 years. LEAD was the first ever study to show a significant efficacy effect in an AMD population. We are strong believers in the meaningfulness of these clinical results, despite the study not meeting the primary endpoint across the entire study population. ELIX remains on track to establish US regulatory pathway for 2RT in AMD with the FDA during calendar year 19, with submission to the FDA of regulatory documents anticipated in current quarter. The company expects to meet with the FDA and report on these outcomes in the fourth quarter of this calendar year. Finally, to our outlook on slide 19. We expect our group EBITDA for the 2020 financial year to improve on FY19, subject to global economic conditions and foreign currency exchange rates. We expect iTrack revenue growth to continue and that business to turn EBITDA positive in second half FY20. We will focus on OPEX control as investing phase moves to sales execution and focus on reduction in working capital requirement, particularly in inventory. ELIX will promote the light study findings to continue market leadership position in SLT for glaucoma. And finally, we will leverage specialist glaucoma sales force capability to promote both iTrack and SLT to increase our global footprint in 2020 and beyond. That now concludes the formal presentation of our FY19 investor presentation. I would now like to turn the call over to the operator to commence the question and answer session.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star, then two. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question today comes from Tanishish Jain with Bell Potter Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Maria, and congrats on your first call.
Thank you.
Just a couple of questions from me. Just on slide 3, can you let me know why the Latin America market was significantly down over PCP?
That was predominantly from the change of our manufacturing addresses from Gilbert Street to Mawson Lakes. We actually had to get some updates in our regulatory documentation, so there was a bit of a slowdown in the LATAM market.
Right, okay. And then just, I guess, you know, on the SLT, the growth has slowed down versus what we've been seeing over the last couple of years, even though it grew 10% on PCP, and I think second half we really saw the growth coming down. Have you been able to identify what the cause was for that and how should we be looking at growth rates moving forward?
With the light study, we actually predict that that will actually go back up. I think most of most of the market was just waiting for the outcome from the light studies, and now that we do have that, we do believe it will go back up.
Right, so there wasn't any one particular region that you could point out as driving the slowdown?
No.
Okay. And then just on the iTrack, you did mention that the margins were down over PCP due to some manufacturing rework. Can you just clarify that?
So basically, we did actually expand our sites in Fremont. So we were actually having two sites. So our overhead absorption rates were a bit higher. So hence why the margins had decreased.
Right. Okay. And you did mention that the new account. The new orders have come down over PCP, and that's despite having a strong growth in new account numbers. What's driving that?
Tana, it's Tom here. I'll take that one. So if you look at the new orders, they have declined a little bit, but the base is very small. So the definition as Alex puts forward on new order, new orders and reorders, is the new order is essentially the size of the first order at a new account that's set up within that period. It doesn't encapsulate all orders from that new account over the 6 or 12 month period that we've reported. So what you would expect is that new order rate wouldn't shift materially period to period if we're setting up new accounts, because their first orders are typically small orders, as you can appreciate. As their clinical experience grows, you expect accounts to order more iTrack over time. So really the number is the reorder rate, which encapsulates the second order from those new accounts and beyond. And that grew, I think, 46% during the period.
Yes, so that's the impressive. I guess I'm just trying to understand that, you know, just if I'm looking at PCP, obviously we've had a strong growth in new account numbers. So I'm assuming we had more new orders. So should I just take it that compared to PCP, the size of that first order from that new account has decreased?
It infers, that's right. So the new account setups between the first half and the second half was not too different, and the new orders were a little bit different, but again, I refer you to the base being low. So what it does suggest is that the new account, their initial orders on a dollar basis are slightly lower than what has been seen historically. You have to sort of bear in mind, without calling out the differences between the ASCs and the hospitals, it really does depend on what that new account is. If it's a larger hospital, it's probably likely to order a higher number initially versus a smaller ASC, for example.
Mm-hmm. And typically, in terms of your reorder, obviously you've seen a big growth. Do you have a sense of, you know, in a six-month period or in a year period, how many reorders do you typically get from an account on average?
We don't provide that level of granularity necessarily on iTrack, the account level. However, you know, consistent with what we've presented historically or told the market historically, typically for new accounts, they take at least 2 quarters, 6 months, to commence what we would see to be more consistent and higher levels of order rate. And that's principally the effect of the clinicians' learned experience in iTrack. As they become more proficient and more expert, they do tend to treat a higher proportion of patients. It also is subject to, of course, whether or not they are seeing patients who would be a good fit for iTrack within that period as well. So that's sort of the dynamic that we do see. We will give some consideration to what other information we may be able to provide in the future as we get more consistency, I guess, across the accounts through time, and we can come back to you on that.
No worries. And I guess just one last one for me. On the outlook statement, Maria, you mentioned that you're looking at leveraging your specialist glaucoma sales force to promote both iTrack and SLT. Should I take that as implying that you're no longer going to have, I guess, you know, additions in the 21 sales force that you've got for iTrack, but kind of use the sales force that you've got existing for the laser business to basically be promoting iTrack as well?
Correct. So we're using our current sales force to actually get that message across, because we believe that they do go and see the same physicians, which is the glaucoma specialist, to be able to promote the iTrack as well. So we believe that will give us a greater footprint out in the US and the EMEA markets.
Right. So we're not expecting, I guess, the 21 number for iTrack now to grow from here, at least in the next couple of years.
The sales force numbers, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That is correct. So that sort of feeds back into trying to keep our OPEX lows as well, and that is that we don't increase headcount and then utilise our current resources to be able to grow the business.
All right. Okay. I've just got a last one, and I'll finish off. Just on the inventory, what kind of reduction can we expect from the current level?
Well, we don't actually give exact numbers around that, but we do expect to see a good amount of reduction, and that is at least 10 to 20% over this next year.
And that's primarily coming from the laser business or the iTrack business?
A bit of both, but predominantly from the laser business. As you can imagine, the capital equipment is a lot more expensive.
Yeah. Great. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tanu.
Again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. The next question comes from Harnish Jameson, a private shareholder. Please go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank Maria and Tom for making this available with another investor conference call. It does make it easier to communicate with shareholders.
Thank you, Hamish.
Just to follow up on the last person who asked questions, I calculate SLT sales dropped from H1 to H2 from 16.8 to 15.6 million. And I know you said people were waiting for the light trial to come out, but that was released over 2 months ago. I do worry that this is the start of a trend, and, you know, what strategies have you got in place to try to reverse that loss?
Yeah. So part of combining consolidating the two sales force will actually promote that SLT light study and promote the iTrack and SLT utilising our current sales force. So that is one of the key strategies. So you're not going to be an iTrack representative or a laser representative. You're going to be a glaucoma representative for LX. And that, we believe, will drive those SLT sales.
Is there perhaps competitors or something else selling SLT? Because you would expect with the light trial being released to have a sudden big boost in sales.
So Hamish, it's Tom here. So typically in clinical medicine, irrespective of a very high quality scientific publication that light represented in the second leading medical journal being the Lancet, the pull-through is never crystallised quickly. For education and awareness purposes with the clinical community, it does require a concerted marketing effort to make he or she aware of those results as good as they were. So as with any entrenched standard of care, which eye drops typically are, they are a first-line recommended agent in newly diagnosed primary open-angle glaucoma. That progressive shift will take some time. However, if you look at the two glaucoma markets where eye drops are used far more frequently as a first-line regimen, those markets are including the United States and the United Kingdom, the UK. So clearly those two markets, as opposed to Australia where SLT is a very entrenched first-line standard of care, those are the two markets where some education and awareness is required to push through the LIGHT study to see that change in medical practice. What I might add as well is the UK is very dependent on changes to a group called NICE. So NICE currently recommend to the National Health Service, the NHS, that eye drops are a first-line treatment choice. In the UK, that needs to change to SLT or have SLT included as an alternative option to garner utilisation in the UK. And that just highlights, I guess, the time-based approach when you have new information like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my next question is around ultrasound sales. Looking back at your sales, you know, 3 or 4 years ago it was $10 million a year. This year it was 4.3, and I know you released the Ultrasound Prime in May, but do you think that's going to increase it? Could it potentially increase sales to $10 million a year now that the product's come out, or are ultrasounds being used, or new ultrasounds being used less by ophthalmologists?
Well, the iPrime is precisely that. It sort of gives the ophthalmologist new technology. It has it does have an image quality that is above the ultrasound. So hence the market has been waiting for that release. So we do anticipate that sales will actually accelerate in FY20 now that has actually been released.
It's quite a big acceleration, you know. It's dropped down to 4.3, whereas 4 years ago it was $10 million. So do you think it could increase back as the market potentially could it get up towards the $10 million again?
I think we're certainly expecting growth, Hamish, off that new release. So Maria's quite right. There was a deferral in purchasing decision because the previous generation lacked some of the feature quality that some competitors had introduced over that period. So, you know, when you lose market share through a redundant offering, which you've now created a second generation from, the crystallisation back to, you know, that 10 million will not occur quickly. But we are, as Maria said, we are expecting growth off that platform with the new release, which has advantages now over those competitors. Whereas previously it was... It did lack some of those features that Maria mentioned.
And my next question relates to 2RT, and I know you're waiting decisions on the FDA, but it seems to me likely that they will request another randomised clinical trial, although we don't know. You expect some feedback from that later in the year, do you, from the FDA?
That's correct, Hamish. It's Tom. I'll take that one if that's okay. The process with the FDA is ongoing. As we guided today, we are expecting to make those regulatory submissions and have a meeting with the FDA and have an outcome from the FDA prior to the end of calendar year 2019. Your point about the requirement of another study, that is the most likely outcome from those discussions with the FDA. However, until such time as the FDA has concluded that a study is required, we simply can't be drawn on, you know, being 100% certain that will be the case. So we have engaged regulatory consultants to assist us with exactly the positioning we should take with the FDA, noting that the lead study had elements to it, most particularly the primary endpoint and how it was measured through multimodal imaging. That's quite new for the FDA, who, when they think about age-related macular degeneration, they are focused and they guide companies to an endpoint called visual acuity, how many lines or letters on a chart you can read. Whereas for intermediate AMD, patients do have, well, they have maintained visual acuity, but they have the early stages of retinal damage. So we also need, of course, to change the thinking a little bit from visual acuity to monitoring progression through surrogate measures like imaging, where we can see in fine detail progressive damage to the retinal pigment epithelium, or RPE.
I mean, I believe that 2RT could be a blockbuster, and, you know, certainly all the trials are pointing in that direction. Another RCT is going to require probably another capital raising and realistically take 5 or 6 years till we get the result. I believe personally that the way for Alex to go forward is to partner with a big multinational who would be interested in the investment, and that might provide some significant value to Alex in the medium term as they realise the potential of what this could do. Are you considering following a partnership with a bigger international company to continue to develop 2RT?
So I think that's very much, it's a good question, and the answer to that question is all options are on the table. However, again, to progress one particular option would be premature at this juncture until such time as we have feedback from the FDA, and if that feedback is that if LX requires a pivotal study in the United States for registration purposes, exactly what the cost, size and time of that study will look like. But suffice to say, the company will run parallel programs to examine exactly what is the most accretive value proposition for shareholders. So rightly you say we could partner it, we could spin it out, we could self-fund it. If that requires a capital raise, again, we would make sure that shareholders were fully informed of exactly which process we intend to go down. But as I say, it's very premature to push in one particular direction at this juncture.
Would there be another conference call or opportunity for shareholders to discuss the options, because Alex has done 2 or 3 capital raisings over the last 5 years, and I just feel these processes, delivering these new technologies to markets, take a long time, and you need a strong company to push it, really. Otherwise, doctors generally ignore some of these new technologies. And I guess would there be another opportunity to discuss the findings or the options with shareholders?
It's a good point. So if we will consider definitely a conference call with investors once we have that feedback. So we will announce clearly what the FDA has guided LX to do with 2RT, and we'll be very transparent with that, as transparent as we can be naturally, given the dialogue with the FDA. There may be some elements we can't talk to. However, we will happily and confidently put forward what the FDA has told us and share that with you, and we can debate that if you like on a call.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that. That's my questions.
Thank you, Hamish.
Thanks, Hamish.
Next question is a follow-up from Tanisha Jain with Bell Potter Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my follow-up questions. Just 2 quick ones for me. Given the 2 months in FY20, mm-hmm. I guess a couple of things, I guess I would like to ask is, A, you know, you mentioned that the live trial had kind of deferred people's purchasing decision and also the launch of the iPrime. Have we then seen any uptick since the end of June over this previous last 2 months?
There's no comment on that. We can't actually give that information to you, Tanu.
Right. Okay. And then I guess, Tom, just on your comment, you did mention that, you know, with the results of the light, it takes time for pull-through to come, and, you know, we'll need, I guess, protocols changing and stuff, which I understand. But I guess if there were people deferring the purchasing decision till these results were out, if I'm comparing it with what happened with 2RT in the lead trial, where I guess post the trial results, I think within 2 months we saw a significant increase in orders. What do you think is really the difference driving the behavior with both of these?
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously the base for 2RT was negligible in the PCP, and therefore the growth in percentage terms was high, albeit the revenues, you know, were unremarkable, I think 1.8 million. SLT is a well-established global intervention for early glaucoma. The difference being is that historically no one has ever run a large randomized control clinical study that has directly compared and contrasted eye drops with SLT, but looking at both functional outcomes, but also the cost effectiveness of each intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we look at, as I mentioned, if we look at the US market, which is a, you know, private payer and a public payer being Medicare, you know, that is a little bit different than the UK, which is a single, effectively a single payer market with the NHS.
Yes.
You know, that will take time through that NICE process. But in the United States, you know, SLT has been around for, over 10 years, I think, from memory. Therefore, you know, there's a lot of information around SLT, clearly, as both Alex and others have promoted SLT for glaucoma over these years. And so to have that new clinical information, yeah, it's as exciting and as interesting as it is in the US market, where they are familiar with SLT already, it's not going to have that same pivot initially as maybe what 2RT did, where we saw the pull through of those results, principally because there is no treatment for IAMD anywhere in the world. And so when European clinicians particularly saw the 2RT results from LEAD, they purchased a number of units, and we saw that growth.
Yes.
So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, yes it does. Thanks so much, Tom.
The next question is also a follow-up from Harnish Jameson, a private shareholder. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Tom. Just following up my question on 2RT. Obviously, there was a lot of noise and that after it was released last October. You know, realizing the value of that to other bigger companies is a process that takes time. Is Alex actively involved with that, with other companies, with other discussions, or are they just waiting for the FDA? Given, I mean, I guess we think we know what the FDA answer is, but I guess what I'm getting is this a case for actively involving with other companies now, even before the FDA, or waiting for the FDA outcome? And
no,
just,
I think
starting to discuss it with them.
From the perspective of the LEAD clinical results, just to go back one step, and as Maria mentioned, the primary endpoint of the study across the entire patient population was not met. There was a spectacular response from a very well-defined subgroup, the so-called RPD minus subgroup, as you recall. I guess in retrospect, had the primary endpoint been met, we'd be having a very different conversation with you today. However, it was not met, and accordingly, we are... from a European marketing perspective, it's all about RPD minus. We are not permitted to market and sell 2RT for AMD in the United States, and that's exactly why we're having those FDA discussions. So, you know, part of the rationale for not necessarily having deep and meaningful conversations with prospective partners at this stage is that they simply would not engage on the basis of an uncertain registration pathway in the United States, and currently it is uncertain until such time as we have that feedback from the FDA and a clinical plan, if required, a clinical plan mapped precisely. And then one can determine the likelihood of success of that clinical plan and design, in which case it makes those, as you say, those partnering discussions for funding, if required, for that pivotal study, you know, far more far simpler and far more cogent because we have the, you know, notionally the buy-off from the FDA of that study.
Yeah, no, it's just interesting. I personally think this is one of the strongest elements of Alex, and it could be valued more than the whole capitalisation of Alex at the moment if it was held by a prominent US-listed company. It's certainly been very promising in what it's shown, and very frustrating how they chose the primary and secondary endpoints in the study in retrospect.
That's clinical trials. Unfortunately, they do throw up surprises that you don't necessarily envisage at the commencement of the study. And that group was not deemed at commencement to be potentially clinically important. In retrospect, they clearly are an important subgroup and a defined subgroup of IAMD patients. So for us, I guess with the 2RT and the lead results in hand, we have, you know, some very interesting data there that we can collectively exploit to the advantage of all LX shareholders. And the way to exploit that are those options that we've discussed. And as I say, we will present an option following the dialogue with the FDA.
Yeah, no, it's just frustrating with the clinical trial predetermined endpoints, and you're right, it's just back to the drawing board and a long time course to potentially get it re-examined.
Yeah, and look, there are some, I mean, the AMD market is the FDA, I guess, their thinking has changed a little bit in more recent times. There's a company called Apellis in the United States that has two phase three clinical studies where the FDA has changed its thinking a little bit from visual acuity to an imaging-based endpoint, looking at change in baseline atrophy in those patients. So there is a dynamic occurring where, you know, visual acuity for early forms of AMD is not a practical endpoint purely because it can take many years for patients' vision to be impaired. Mm-hmm. So the thinking is changing, which is good for Alex.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Amos.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand the call back over to Ms. Maley for any closing remarks.
Thank you, operator. I wish to thank everyone for joining the call today and for your questions. We look forward to updating the market with our progress during 2020 financial year. Until then, good morning and goodbye.